Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. So, how many people ate using the one spoon practice today? That was a really nice talk by Ajahn Suchito yesterday. And it's just a reminder for each and every one of us that to approach Buddhism is not another way, not more, you know, another thing to learn. Not to approach it, you know, from a normal worldly perspective, but just accumulating information for the sake of it. Right? There is a purpose to the Dhamma talk. There is a purpose to reading things. That is to try to bring it into our own practice, to bring it into our own everyday experience. And, you know, looking around, other than Fred, who's just come into Buddhism recently, you know, most of us have been around Buddhism for a while. And we've heard many, many teachings. So we probably have what it takes to realize Nirvana. The only difference is between us and the enlightened ones is whether we will we have the focus, the dedication, the courage to put these practice into our everyday life, to use some of the tools. So it's not about how much we know, but it's whether how deeply we penetrate these truths. And that's something that, you know, only each and every one of us can do for ourselves. In the core Buddhism, as we chant in the Dhammacakka Sutta, it's very, very simple, just, you know, the Four Noble Truths. And to take it all the way. So I just want to start off just trying to encourage people to always bring it. You know, how can I use this teaching in every day? How can I put this new practice? It's just another talk, and next week another talk, another teacher, another place, another practice, another tradition. And we go on and on and on and on. And it might be very interesting, I'm sure it is. You know, everybody's got their different strengths and weaknesses. But at the end of the day, you know, how willing are you in trying to put the teachings into practice? How willing are you to stick to it, regardless of what the wandering mind says? A great simile that I remember was Lumpa Plin, actually, one of the great meditation masters in Chiang Mai. And he had this great simile for the path to practice and, you know, the way leading to Nirvana. He said, the path of practice is like you're digging a well. You know, there's water, but about 100 meters underneath the surface. And what most people do is they just scratch the surface. Scratch, scratch, scratch. After a few minutes, no water. They go somewhere else, scratch, scratch, scratch. No water. Go to another place, scratch, scratch, scratch. No water. You have a few people who, you know, get out a shovel, roll up their sleeves, and start shoveling, digging a little bit. And then, you know, maybe you go 5 meter, 10 meter, tired, bored, hot, sweaty. Like, no water. And you go to another place. And they do this, you know, get about 10 holes, 100 holes, 1,000 holes. Still no water. So, and then they tell their friend, see? No water. This place got no water. I've been digging for 30 years. All these different holes here. No water to be found. But the truth is, there is water. You just have to stick with one hole and keep digging. Day in, day out. Digging through your boredom, your restlessness, your frustration. Digging through the doubting mind. Digging because you have faith. And when the Buddha said, Daigen, because you have faith in what the enlightened master said. Daigen, because you have faith in your own innate ability to realize enlightenment. Because you have faith in your own ability to go one step at a time, one shovel at a time, and keep digging. Digging because you are just stubborn. You won't give up. And you dig. And that's how you get water. It's not how many holes you've dug. Not how interesting the holes are. No, it's about digging. It's about being focused and using focus, patience, and this doggedness of just not giving up. And we obviously, you know, we all have a bit of stubbornness in us, each and every one of us, when I do it our way. But it's good to use the stubbornness for the purpose of realizing the highest, progressing in the Dhamma. Stubborn and not giving up the rules of training. And keeping our precept as clear as, you know, as clean as we can. To say no to the craving once one comes up. To say no to the shortcuts that we could have taken. To say no to when no one's looking. That we still keep the precepts. To say no to the defilements of the mind that comes up. That's what we should be saying no to. There's the ability to just, you know, focus. And we don't have to be the world's most intelligent person. Don't have to be the world's brightest. Don't have to be young. Don't have to be very interesting. Don't have to be very talented. But you do have to be very, very focused. You do have to be very courageous to stick with it. When everybody tells you there's no water, that's something only people with special equipment can do. That's a legend that you heard of. And everything is, there's no such thing as water. It's just in the old books. It doesn't happen anymore. But you don't listen. You listen to what the Buddha said. You listen to your own intuitive kind of feeling. And you go for it. Day in, day out. No matter what the weather is, when you're feeling lazy, feeling inspiring or not, you keep digging. And that's the work of meditation. That's the work of the practice. Not very exciting. It's always, you know, an exciting teacher to go to. It's not an exciting theory to wonder. Something, another exciting book to read. But really, the practice is looking into our own mind and sitting with these different energies that come. What does it feel like when we're bored? What does it feel like when we need a push to this feeling that we want to go somewhere? Go to a different place or change the scenery. Just to sit. What does it want, feel like when we want to change the scenery, change kuti, change teachers? We want to go shopping. It's just to sit with these things that comes up from time to time. And you know, it's not to say that, of course, you know, from time to time we'll be distracted, we'll be bored and we don't want to do it. But that's okay. You know, the practice is always about picking up. Not what happened yesterday. Maybe you had a bad day, a bit grouchy, get into a few fights, or a bit greedy, but so what? That happens to each and every one of us, all the time. So we, you know, kind of redetermine our effort. You know, you bow three times in front of the Buddha statue, say, you know, okay, yesterday didn't do so well, but today I'm going to do better. I'm going to have more mindfulness, maybe more kind, more gentle, maybe more focused. And then we keep on going, keep marching on. And One day we'll get closer and we'll get the ground is a bit wet. And it gives the first hint that we're getting closer. But we don't sit, we don't celebrate too early, we don't start to praise ourselves and disparage others. Oh, see, I'm getting closer, I'm getting wetter, I'm getting wetter. These other people are just running around in the dark, not doing know, we remain focused, remain humble, and keep chipping away the defilements. Keep chipping away what we take to be a sense of self. Keep chipping away any kind of greed or aversions or delusion that comes up in the mind. And yeah, so it's not a, you know, Buddhism, sometimes people, is it a science, is it a psychology, is it a way of life? But I think it's not really, it's, you know, it's kind of different things to different people. But I think the way to approach Buddhist practice is to think it's not really a noun, it's a verb. Buddhism is what you do that counts. It's not what, you know, it's not how it is, you know, it's what to, what we do in each and every moment. How we purifying the precept, the bodily conduct. We acting from kindness and gentleness. We're letting go of the unwholesome state of mind. And that's the great thing about, you know, being in the human realm, being a human, as such as Sujita yesterday. We have this amazing ability to witness, to be a judge, to see and to recollect our actions. They may be in the moment. Even if we made a mistake, we can say, oh, she, ooh, I shouldn't have said that. That wasn't very skillful. But that's okay. And it's only through this mindfulness of knowing what we're doing, that we can recollect. And we know, and they also have our own kind of internal compass to judge whether that was wholesome or unwholesome. And that's the thing. Sometimes, you know, I guess in the books, they break mindfulness into this two category of, you know, to know what's happening and to know whether it's wholesome or unwholesome. And I guess that's one way to describe this ability, this mind of ours. To see and to feel things. But I think, you know, from my own experience, that mindfulness is, yeah, if you really are mindful, you will, the mind anyway, automatically you don't have to decide to move towards wholesome states or move away from unwholesome state. You don't have to decide to move towards happiness and away from suffering. I think it's natural when the mind truly knows what it's doing. It's like sticking your hand in the fire. You do it once and, you know, next time you're not going to be able to force yourself, but it's not going to go towards the fire automatically. As soon as it gets close to the heat, it will veer away. And it's the same with the mind. If it knows something is unwholesome, it will move away from it automatically. But it has to know. It has to be in the present moment. It can't be clouded with fantasy, with dreams, or with this kind of dullness. And that's a practice of meditation, trying to sharpen up a mindfulness, sharpen this clarity, this tool that we have, to really see clearly into reality, see clearly into life. That we don't make mistakes, we know things as they really are. That's the saying we see over and over again in kind of what the Buddha's teaching and the meditation master says. You know, to see things as they really are. It's a good reflection. So much of life for most people is other than that. Unless you have you've calmed the five hindrances of greed, hatred, of doubting, of sleepiness. We usually see things other than they really are. And it's good to remind ourselves of that. But just to start out encouraging people just to use whatever knowledge we have as tools to penetrate, to grind away the defilements we have. And the other thing was, no, it's just reflecting on just the different events today. It was very, very nice to be part of Fritz and the Yarrow Nation going forth. Because it's not an easy thing in this world to be drawn towards the Dhamma so early. And to encourage people just to pursue the path to peace and liberation whatever ways we can. And a sense of mudita. There's anybody, obviously trying to undertake the practice with sincerity. But then again, we each bring our own weakness and strength to the practice. And there's no such, there's not one path, there's not one person, one characteristics that is better than others. In the books of Enneagram, we're all the same, different numbers. But there's no value whether you're a 1, a 2, or a 3, or a 9. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's no need to get into it. But it's something that was very big at Bodhinyana. Your different characteristics, some have more strength than others, but it's not true. It's, whether you're a greedy character, an aversion character, angry character, or deluded character, in the Buddhist teaching, straight from the Buddha, same suffering, same impact. But what we need to do is to come to understand what our strengths and weaknesses are, and use that to help to cultivate the path to peace and liberation. So sometimes you can say, Fred is so lucky, he's only 16 years old, he's already an anagarika in the monastery. I'm 45, I didn't even come to contact with the Dhamma until I was 32. Speaking for myself, it's terrible me. I have 32 years of conditioning I have to undo. But it's not entirely true, because there's many skills that we cultivate in the real, in the world, the working world, that we can also bring to the practice. Working as a professional, you cultivate a lot of patient endurance. Work with people that you would rather not be around, but obviously because you're in the same company, same office, you show up and you work with these people. So it's a good training in the monastery. Not have a choice who we spend our time with. And also not to take these things seriously. That, whether you like a person or not person, you have a job to do. So you put all that aside and you continue working. So it's a great preparation in patient endurance. Just to stick with the project regardless of what the conditions are like. And some of the younger members, who haven't worked may not have that experience. Or sometimes you get young monks who come and then they have doubts. I didn't have a girlfriend. Haven't got married, have kids yet. Maybe I should disrobe and do all that. Or I haven't gone to college, haven't gone to uni. So we get lots of young monks who are ordained for a while. And then after all, they disrobe because they say, I haven't lived life yet, so I got an experience first. So that's the drawback of, being very young, of course. It's always this doubt. I'm not saying that Fred has these particular doubts, but but there are these doubts that can come up. That's right. Maybe better if I finish my high school. I can become enlightened that way. Now I haven't finished it. I think Fred was around for the talk about the... digressing, but the talk on the professor and the sailor. You don't need to know everything, Fred. You just know how to swim, okay? That's the most important thing. Just know swimology, and it also brings back to the initial start of the talk. There are many things about Buddhism, even or life, to know, to learn, to experience, and a certain sense of joy and happiness in that. But really, ask yourself, is that going to lead towards more peace and more happiness? That leads to your liberation. If you know what happiness is and what suffering is, and you know how to let go, that's all you need to know. You don't have to know every sort of suffering to know what suffering is. All you need to have is a focused mind, clear mind, and see suffering deeply. So you don't need to have, go to war to know what the suffering is in war. You don't need to have many relationships to know the suffering relationship. You can infer, you can see that there are changes and the stress of being, just being in the world brings many types of suffering or stresses, you know, from the most refined to the coarse. You know, not getting what you want, you don't have to live in the world to know that. You come to the monastery, there's lots of little rules and things that you will come up that will start to push different buttons that you have. And that's where the training is, just, you know, to see, to use the external as a way to see into your internal workings of your mind. And all it takes is, you know, sincerity, honesty. It takes a sense of focus and lots of patience and an enormous amount of stubbornness of not to give up, no matter what people say. And certainly, and you know, and like I said over and over again, Ajahn Mahabua, who was a boxer, I think his advice was, yeah, no matter how many times he was knocked down, no matter how many times he got pummeled to the ground, as long as he stood up, time over and over again, you know, victory was his. And that's what we need to each and every one of us to bring to our practice. How many times we make mistakes, we get angry, we get into an argument, how many times we get confused, depressed, how many times we've done things out of greed. As long as we pick ourselves up, redetermine our conduct, and keep striving, keep meditating, keep working towards peace and stillness, we will surely arrive, realize the ultimate state of happiness one day. Let's say it's going to be tomorrow, not next week, next year, 10 years, 10 lifetime. But that's okay. Because the path is the path of increasing happiness. More happy, more peace, get wiser, get better as we go. So it's always a win-win situation. And you know, going back to the stimuli of digging for the water. If you dig for the water, you don't have to have very, very good shape. You don't have to have very strong arms. Lots of people with strong arms dig very fast. Maybe they get bored and go dig for another hole. But you have these clever engineers who devised a very good shovel to dig. But in the middle of it, they get bored and start inventing other things and doing, you know, building big buildings instead. So they lose focus. So all you need is a simple old-fashioned shovel. All you need is a teaching of what the Buddha said, the teaching of what the wise meditation master said. You don't have to have the latest shovel, you don't have to have the latest teaching, the newest theory that comes along. An old-fashioned shovel, always do it. Need it, just roll your sleeve, focus, and just dedication. One shovel after another, one day after the next. Not focusing, oh my God, how much more I have to go. So much kilesa in my mind, I'm never going to get there. No, stay in the present moment, one shovel at a time. Move in the dirt. Stop when you're tired. You start again the next day. Doesn't matter how many days you've been doing it. Doesn't matter how deep it is. Just focus, stay in the present moment. One day you get there. So that's a little Dhamma talk I offer to the community. A little encouragement for Fred to keep on digging. And I end the talk tonight.